Okay.
We're on.
Wow. Okay.
So, we're going to babble. Things have gotten a little odd for the past few weeks.
You had a 2-week hiatus.
We have been delayed again in trying to wind up this X-part discussion.
Multi-part.
And I feel like we keep losing momentum because we keep getting delayed by circumstances.
By life.
Yeah. But this circumstances recently have been quite relevant to our discussion.
Mm, entirely relevant.
So why don't you tell us about your little adventure and then I'll talk about my little adventure.
Okay. So a couple of weeks ago, a relative of mine was ill and needed treatment at a local hospital here, but doesn't live here, right?
Yep.
So I had to go pick this person up and bring him here. And our plan had been to test, and if he was negative, let him quarantine for a few days and test again to see if he'd expressed any infection.
In our home.
In our home.
Yeah. We cleaned up the upstairs.
It's like a miracle.
Got it all ready so he could actually crash here. For
and we actually like wanted to use the room after we tidied it. It was it's kind of magnificent.
Yeah.
So that was the plan. And of course, when I got there, he tested positive.
Right. And then you had a very interesting decision to make.
Yes. Oh, do I get in the car? Do I, you know, do I just leave him? Do I ditch him here? Or what? And the deal is...
He was in urgent need of medical care.
He was in urgent need of medical care. And he probably wasn't going to die that night or even the next night. But he was in a lot of physical pain and was at risk of death.
Yes.
Without treatment.
No, it was a life-threatening condition.
Right.
But not necessarily something that you needed to call an ambulance for.
Precisely. It was in that sort of...
It was in that gray zone.
That gray zone. You know, he wasn't bleeding out. He wasn't having a heart attack.
No, but he needed to be seen very soon.
Correct. And so, you know, the fact is, if I saw a person on the side of the road that needed medical care...
Right.
I would put them in my car and take them.
You would risk infection...
To take them.
To help save someone...
Yes. So I did.
He did not have a lot of other resources to turn to for transport.
No, not for transport and whatnot. He doesn't drive anymore, et cetera.
Yeah.
So
you made the decision.
I made the decision we're going to get in the car.
Bring him quite a long drive.
Quite a long drive.
With
so
masks on and windows open.
Masks on, windows open, and hope for the best. and then... I wasn't going to let him stay in the house with
right,
the children.
We decided not to bring him here.
Right, and we got a hotel room, which was awful. Sweet Jesus. I cannot even believe the hotel. So at the intersection of 23 and Washtenaw Avenue in Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti, just don't
tried
use
to put him in
any
a
of those hotels. They're all trash.
In a hotel near the hospital that he could easily...
Right.
Know,
easily have access and not be... Right.
Right. And but no, they were
horrifying. No,
they were
just
horrifying.
Yeah. Oh, God, they were awful.
Ann Arbor has really gone to shit, honestly.
Yeah,
the area has really gone to hell. It's like economic kind of crunch has continued and the wage stagnation has continued and all that.
So that was sort of a downer. But,
you got him ensconced in a hotel
room.
Set up and get ready to go to his appointments.
Right.
And then you yourself now...
Decided to quarantine in my own home for 7 days.
So we had set up this room so that...
He could quarantine.
But now it was...
It was me who was going to quarantine.
Right.
And it was a delightfully boring 7 days.
Yeah.
I tested negative the whole time. I tested negative after the fact. And I tested negative with a PCR.
Mm-hmm.
So at no time did I test positive. I did have some symptoms.
You got a PCR during that week? I thought you were
after the week, like 10.
Oh, after, right. Okay, well, we'll get to that part
point.
Later.
But at no point did I test positive. And what I did...
We were using home antigen tests.
Right. And what I did to reduce transmission was we both wore N95 masks. We sat in different parts, like I was in the front and he was in the back, and we had all the windows open.
In the drive.
Yeah. So, which was the main point of transmission, point where transmission could occur. And then, We just kept it moving. And the quarantine period, I did have some symptoms, but they were these vague, ambiguous symptoms.
This
like
has
a headache.
Happened to us a lot.
You could have a headache for any reason.
Oh my God, is this COVID?
I have some sinus congestion. You could have some sinus congestion for lots of reasons.
Yeah.
And so I had a few of those type of things. And I did get on some nutritional therapies to support myself.
Do you want to describe your regimen there?
Yeah.
We're not medical professionals.
No, and this is what I did. This is not what I'm telling you to do. I'm not telling anybody what to do.
You know, I'll go a little further. I would actually recommend trying this if you can do it relatively easily. None of the things Grace is talking about are prescription, and none of them should be likely to harm you in any way.
Right. So, you know, yes, but for my part, this is what I did. You do what you like. I took vitamin D, 6,000 IU each morning. I took vitamin C, about 1,000 micrograms or one full gram, roughly every hour. And I took zinc tabs whenever I felt
a scratchy throat. A couple times a day.
So I think the first day, I took six. And by the end, I had one or two, mm-hmm. you know, so it varied. And the other thing I did, this is another transmission thing. At one point during the ride, I stopped to pick up some dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And I got out of the car and I took my mask off and I irrigated my sinuses and my eyes.
With iodine.
And my throat with iodine. Not straight iodine.
Yeah.
Like a 0.5%, 1% solution of iodine.
Yeah. We've been using that periodically when there's a good risk of exposure.
Yeah. If I've really risk exposure, then I'll irrigate with iodine. And I do that because there have been tests.
Mm. This is actually a common thing done in Asia, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
After a potential exposure to irrigate your sinus, or to get through a cold faster to reduce the length of illness.
It does sting a bit, but it's not, you know, and it will stain your whatever.
It stains my teeth.
Yeah, but it's not the worst, you know.
Not the worst thing. And so if you're allergic to iodine, you obviously shouldn't
absolutely
do this.
Absolutely not.
Don't touch this if you're allergic to iodine. And if you are, you should already know.
Yeah.
Is there anything else? So iodine, and again, I did that like the first 24 hours or so, like what during the trip and like the first 24 hours.
Yeah. So you stayed in here and I put on a mask to bring food trays up to the top of the stairs. And then when I took your food dishes away, they immediately went into soapy water for hand washing rather than just sitting out with the rest of the dishes.
Mm-hmm.
And I wiped down your tray with alcohol wipes, and including the handles on the tray.
Especially the handle.
Yeah, where you would have touched it. And you also kept the windows open up here. If not fully open, then at least cracked, maybe. And
part of the time the AC was not on, so I had all the windows open?
Yeah, our AC was out too. And it was extremely hot up here.
It was so hot. It was so hot, I couldn't believe it. But the
You did have fans, so at
least. And I had some fans going.
So the power wasn't out, at least.
Except for the first night.
Oh, that's right. We had another power outage. The power outage went out again, and the AC was out. So suddenly it's like 90 some degrees.
90 some degrees. And, that was awful. But once the AC was back on, I kept small windows in each room open to get some exchange of outside air. And so we did not just have stagnant air building up upstairs.
Right. Well, I was slightly concerned that if we ran the AC, we'd be circulating air from this room through the rest of the house.
Yeah.
But we don't quite know how else to do it, because if we're going to have the AC on anywhere in the house, it's also up here. We can't literally turn on and off sections
of the AC.
And
the heat, you can do that, but not the AC.
Yeah. And the way it works, you know, cold air comes out of the mini ducts in here.
Mm-hmm.
But the return is only one place, and that's in the family room. So I guess if you have the windows open up here, my thinking was that, I mean, obviously the AC doesn't work as well if you're in here with the windows open. But if you have like a slight overpressure caused by the air coming through the ducts, they're going to blow out the window rather than under the crack in the door.
Give it the choice, right? Yeah.
Right. So
we did what we could.
So this was a little bit hard on me and the family.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Malachi is used to sleeping in our bed still and nursing with you on demand.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
Around the clock, pretty yeah, right. whenever he wants. Feels like I mean, it, yeah. several times a day and at bedtime.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And suddenly you weren't here. And so
right.
that was a real challenge. Also, I still needed to work, you know.
During the day.
Full time.
Right.
I did talk to my managers. I have three or four managers.
It's just one person. Why do you need three managers?
And I told them that I was going to try and work 2 3-hour shifts a day and take a chunk of time in the middle of the day to do cooking for the
right.
like cooking and supervision for the other kids. But other times of day, the older kids would be largely able to manage the younger kids. Mm-hmm. And that mostly worked. Things were
Broadly.
Difficult at bedtime with the babies.
Yeah.
And some of the kids actually, I think, did a little growing up because Josh took on taking care of Malachi and getting him cuddled and slept
Settled down,
with him.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So he didn't want to sleep with me in the bed because I think it reminded him of you being gone.
Where's mom? She's
but he
here.
Would like sleep on the couch with Joshua.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they, you know, for this week, we basically waived all our usual screen time restrictions.
Free for all for
so yeah. They watched a lot of TV shows during
well,
that
week. With the
internet
week. And all, kids practically raised themselves.
Yeah, to keep the babies, you know, like
quiet.
As settled
quiet.
As possible, especially right. while I was
while
working.
You were working, right? And couldn't right. like necessarily solve a lot of
so. But
issues.
You came out of quarantine 7 days. I don't know how many hours that is. I'm not going to do the math, but like
yeah.
literally seven exactly 7 days later.
Yeah.
And we got, you know, gradually back to our normal life.
Normal cells, mostly.
And then
cleaned up.
This was on a Tuesday.
Right.
And then Friday night, I started feeling
a little
scratchy
woozy.
And cough. My throat was bothering me and whatnot.
Yep.
And so Saturday morning, I took a COVID test.
Home antigen test.
A home antigen test. And mine was positive.
Yes.
And meanwhile, I had not left the house.
Right. I was right. your only point of exposure, right?
The only possible point of exposure. Although, I mean, you go through drive-thrus to pick up coffee with your mask on and stuff like that, but
yeah.
that's so unlikely.
Yeah.
It's not
it's really, a
really worth
low
worrying
risk.
About.
But the, but no, I was the only, and what I thought then, and this is what I was talking about a little earlier,
yeah.
It is hard. You need to make all the decisions about what you're going to do. Before you have to do it.
Right. It's really, and we did this last year.
Right. We made it.
We had like
a decision tree.
A pretty good plan.
Right.
But our circumstances have changed, including the way we manage this space with our housemate, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So things are different-ish.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I hadn't decided before I walked into quarantine, and actually decided before I went to meet this relative.
Right.
Was, how long
yeah.
I needed to quarantine, or one of us needs to quarantine if the relative has COVID and we're exposed. I need to make that decision
right.
first. So I was sitting here on Tuesday and I was kind of saying, so
7 days really
so,
enough?
Is that really enough? Do I need to come out tomorrow? Should I be 10 days? Should it be this? And I had actually spoken with my doctor like the first day of quarantine.
Yes.
And he said, you know, 7 days should be enough.
Should be enough.
7 days should be fine. You could go as long as 14. You could do 10. But a lot of countries, their entry quarantines are like 5 nights and 6 days.
Oh,
so
really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's all?
Yeah.
Oh.
So he says, I think you'd be fine at 7.
Yeah.
And of course, as soon as you tested positive, I was like, you know what? I needed to wait the 10 days and then have a PCR. Like
yeah.
at that moment, right. it was clear to me what the safest thing would have been to do.
Right.
The thing that's actually backed by data. But on the
yeah.
on day 7, after I was... I hadn't done all the sewing that I could do, but I'd watched all the shows I wanted to watch.
I mean, it's not like you had nothing to do up here. And we should mention, you actually got out a few times.
I did. I went out to the garden. I actually did some grocery
pickup. So we cleared the house,
right.
got the kids all out of the way, like on the back deck and everything.
Yeah.
And then
right.
Grace would put her mask on and scoot out through the house and then go work in the garden for a couple hours. And
yeah.
then And then we'd clear the house again, evacuate the route, you know, and you'd go back upstairs. And we did this. And you also went to get
some curbside groceries.
You did some curbside grocery pickup too. So you weren't, you know, masked and all that. You weren't completely confined to this little
bedroom. No, I was not actually. Bathroom. Like, yeah, no. I added some things and it was all right. And just to be clear, I this is how safe I think it is to do curbside pickup. I had no concerns about making someone else ill.
No. Well, when I do
or
this.
Or sending this home to someone else.
When I do this at Home Depot or Best Buy or whatnot, I pull into the parking lot. I open the back. Someone with a cartload of whatever looks through the window and I show them the code on my phone.
Right.
And they give me the thumbs up and then they stick the stuff in the back of my car.
Close the car.
And then, you know, that's the limp. Right. You know, that's, I think that risk is very, very low, especially if we're both masked, because it automatically takes place outside. It's right. Really.
Well, and also, just to be very clear about transmission, the conditions have to be right.
Yeah.
And those conditions are indoors for an extended period of time with air that's not been exchanged.
Usually, although the equation with Delta is a little different. We're trying to be even more cautious about sharing air. Mm-hmm. When you're outdoors, there's normally a lot of UV light that deactivates viral particles very, very quickly.
Right.
It's still possible to transmit the viruses sitting next to each other.
Right, but those settings are usually like...
Sports events,
or, you know, like a wedding.
Under a tent or something that. Yeah.
So, you know.
But good air circulation, especially if you're in, like, not shaded, it's very difficult. It's very rare to transmit that way. Yeah. But not saying it's impossible.
No, anything's possible.
Yeah. Well, so then I'm like, well, shit, now I have COVID and I've been fully vaccinated, so I'm likely to have an extremely mild case to medium mild, I guess. But what happens now?
Yeah. So the next thing we did was we scheduled a PCR for you and for me that same day.
So we both went and got a PCR test, not even at the same CVS. You went to one and I went to another later. You took me.
What was the thing about that? After we scheduled yours, I thought to myself, well, I should probably have one too.
Yeah, you should have one too.
And we tested both babies for COVID with the home antigen test. Both negative.
Yeah.
And our PCRs both came back negative the next day.
So I was then basically, this was Labor Day weekend. It's gone so fast, I can't even remember which. Anyway, okay. Labor Day weekend, I spent all day Saturday and Sunday up here in isolation. Waiting for test results.
Right.
And that's honestly a little demoralizing because I had lots of stuff I was hoping to pack into the 3-day weekend.
Yeah.
But we still had a nice, on Monday, harvested a bunch of stuff from the garden, did a huge feast. On Facebook, you can see some of the pictures of all the. I got the kids involved with chopping veggies from the garden. It was very nice. Tons of eggplant.
Yeah, the eggplant has been good this year.
Yeah.
So that, but that period, how shall I say, was brief, and you had no symptoms other than the like very mild symptoms.
Ambiguous symptoms. Very early on, I had like these mild ambiguous symptoms. But you know what? Then I started your vitamin regimen too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
And the next day, like Sunday, I got a shower up here. And I felt, after all the vitamins and everything, I actually felt fantastic.
Yeah.
Like healthier than usual.
Yeah. There's one thing that no one says to do this, and I'm not saying to do this. I happened to do this to support my milk supply while I was away from my baby.
Oh, right.
I started drinking a lot of fenugreek tea. I don't know. It was good for what ailed me.
Made me feel good too. It's this kind of odd bitter herb seeds that you like float in the...
And so all I did was I put a tablespoon of fenugreek seeds into a quart mason jar and topped it off with water and just let it steep. That's all I did. It wasn't fancy
or anything.
I didn't boil it. I did nothing. And then I just drank the water.
Yeah.
And Yeah, no, it was very refreshing. So, and I don't know if it helped. It certainly didn't hurt.
Right. But I think all the vitamin C, I wouldn't take a gram an hour or whatnot. That's too much for me. I think it would affect, it would upset my digestive system.
Oh, right.
You do, if you take a lot of ascorbate, you can definitely wind up, giving yourself diarrhea.
Upsetting your belly. Yeah.
A few grams a day, I think there's almost nothing less toxic than
vitamin
that.
C.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, I wouldn't take this vitamin regimen
all around the clock.
Around the clock, around the year round.
Yeah.
I wouldn't take this in anticipation of being ill.
Yeah.
I would take this if I had some reason to believe. Suspect that I might be ill or
again, let's just be clear, we're not saying that you can cure COVID with vitamins
all.
We're saying that you may be able to lessen your severity. You may be able to assist your immune system to some degree,
and there's no reason not to assist your immune system
with a vitamin regimen.
Sure.
We're not saying, if you're on a ventilator, they should give you vitamin D, right?
No, that's
a little
not
late
saying.
For that kind of intervention at that point.
Yeah, but if you have some mild symptoms, taking some vitamins to help support your immune system is really not harmful.
Yeah. So I got a call because when I had a positive test, I actually reported it via the
The system on the box. Yeah.
The system on the box, like the.
You take a picture and you kind of, what is it? Texted it or something?
Is it an app? I think you text. I forget what I did, but I texted it to them or something.
Oh, it's one of those codes,
it's a QR code. Right. It launches a website.
Right.
And then the website takes you take a picture of the test. Mm-hmm. So they contacted. This is interesting because I didn't know they would really do this, but they contacted Washtenaw County. And I got a call from a contact tracer.
Yep. Was it
the next
Labor
day?
Day? The next day, And you'd already gotten your PCR results back.
Right. And so I said, I told him what happened. And he said, I don't think you need to quarantine. If you just got a negative PCR and no symptoms, it sounds like you had a false positive.
That is what it sounds like.
So that is the overwhelming likelihood. However, I still think there's a faint chance that I really did catch a very mild transmission, like a light transmission of COVID viruses while you were in quarantine or after you came out. Mm-hmm. And being fully vaxxed, my system knocked it down fast enough that I was never symptomatic. I think it's possible. I don't know.
It's possible.
The only way to determine that would be to have an antibody test, but I don't know that an antibody test would be valid because I've been vaxxed. Can the antibody test distinguish between the antibodies produced by a vaccination and by an infection? Interesting question.
I think that it can.
Maybe. I'm not really sure about that.
I'm not sure about that, but I think that it can. Hmm. Because they still use the antibody test to tell if vaccinated people have been sick in the past.
Right. Well, so again...
So that implies you can tell the difference.
Right.
But
So your relative, that also raises the question of what became of him.
Oh, yeah. So he never had COVID symptoms.
He never developed any symptoms.
At all.
Despite the positive tests.
Nothing.
And... do we then assume that his test... See, my test was very faint, which, a faint test is still a positive test.
Yeah, it's a positive test. I don't think it says anything about the nature of your infection.
I think it might... I'm not saying... Okay, here's the distinction I'm making. I think it might give a sense of what your viral load is like, a slight sense. But I'm... You should not use a faint test to say, I don't have. It's either a yes or no. But the intensity of the response on the strip, maybe it has some relation to your viral load. I don't really know. But was his almost ambiguous or not?
Oh, his was not ambiguous.
His is bright red.
Yours was fair. Yours was actually ambiguous.
It was fairly dim. It was definitely. Well, I initially
it
looks all right. And then I looked under bright light and it was definitely there.
It was definitely there under bright light.
That's the only one I've ever seen that mm-hmm. shows any red at all.
Right.
Now, some of my friends who I gave tests to who did test positive, again, like one of them, you know, I won't mention names, but I gave a set of tests to a friend of mine who's was exposed to someone and whose father was exposed to someone. Right. And he was fully vaccinated and had a faint test, a mm-hmm. faint red, mm-hmm. Very faint, you know, mm-hmm. much like mine. His father had an unambiguously bright red stripe.
Bright red stripe, right.
Yeah. And they...
I thought his father was vaxxed too, though.
He was. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing that he's I'm hearing, mm-hmm. and we talked about this before. I believe that many elderly people don't really mount a very strong rally of their immune system in response to the vaccine. And mm-hmm. even if they do, it may fade earlier than someone who's younger. It's just like many of your systems in the body, the immune system sort of degrades a bit with age.
Yeah. Oh, so many things do.
Yeah.
It's a way of time. So yes, I don't know that gives us... I wouldn't swear to that.
I wouldn't either. I think it's just
it's speculation.
It's just a speculation on my part. But mm-hmm. given that no one else. The reason for wondering and scratching my head about all this is that it's actually very hard to find good numbers on this.
Right, and false positives are the rare thing.
Right. Well, it's hard to find like the numbers. The actual numbers for false positives, but whatever you find, they're much lower than false negatives.
Yeah, false positives are consistently kind of lower than false negatives.
But you know, we've gone through several boxes of tests. It's right. not crazy to believe
one box.
Oh, one box.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, we're into a second box. One and a half boxes.
All right.
Okay, so that's 25 plus.
Yeah, I don't think we've taken 30 tests.
Okay, well, coming up on 30 probably.
Yeah.
Because I'm continuing to test, but I'll get to that point in a minute. Mm-hmm. But it's not crazy to believe that 1 out of 30 might have been a false positive, you know, or 25 or whatever it is.
Maybe so. It seems more likely that 1 out of 25 would be a false negative.
Yeah. Well, but, I think the false negative rate is much higher than that.
Yes, actually. Exactly.
But here's the other speculation of the reason that he did not get sick. Mm-hmm. We strongly suspect that it's possible that he was infected before.
Oh, yeah.
And so may already have a robust immune response.
From his previous infection.
To a reinfection.
Correct.
With Delta.
Correct.
And so, you know, again, got the thing in his nasal passages somewhere.
Yeah.
And developed an infection, but mm-hmm. it was asymptomatic and his immune system knocked it down quickly. It basically lived there just long enough to be caught on
a test.
Right. Yeah. Right. But
before it had been passed.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So, but he could still be contagious during that period.
Yes. He can be contagious. Yes. You could have been contagious. Apparently, you know, apparently I was contagious. If you and I were sick,
yeah,
which, right. you know, at no point did I test positive.
Right. So you have this theory that if someone has absolutely no symptoms, they probably are never contagious.
That's my theory.
And that's none of this violates that theory.
Right.
Right.
So there it is. And so the my sweet little 4-year-old, for whom I'm most concerned, has tested negative throughout this because we became concerned that maybe if it's moving around the house, maybe we should check
right,
her.
Right.
And she's tested negative all throughout this.
Yeah, giving a swab test to a four-year-old is
an unusual experience. I can't really recommend it, actually.
Yeah. No.
Avoid it if you can.
She doesn't. Go figure, she doesn't like having a swab shoved up her nose. And these aren't the pharyngeal nasal swabs.
Oh, the ones
you're
that go
not,
deep?
Right. You're not actually going back to, I can't even, you know, I've had a...
we had one.
I had it done twice.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. No, three times.
Oh, okay, three times. That's right. Never mind. Go on.
Right. The pharyngeal, however you say it, pharyngeal nasal swab is a much longer swab. And they get you to tip your head back, and then they are can navigate that thing right back to the top of your throat. And it's really, it's quite uncomfortable.
Yes.
I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not going to say it in my soul. Agonizing.
No, but I felt it in my soul.
You feel it in your soul. Yeah. The thing is, you feel it for quite a while after they take it out. And you're like,
And you typically start sneezing.
You start sneezing. Right,
right, which is, you know, right. How dangerous is that?
Right.
Do we have a better method yet? Yeah. They do in Asia, but go on.
Yeah. Well, anyway, these the swabs for the antigen tests, they're like Q-tips. I mean, they're long, a little longer, but you don't try and shove them up past your nose.
No.
Right, so... Anyway,
delightful.
But even that, she was very objected to.
Vocally, reasonably. So you know, I mean, who wouldn't, honestly?
Right. But yeah, this is just to clarify. I mean, given that the adults are vaxxed and most of the and the older kids are vaxxed and most of the family is not at high risk, Eleanor is the reason. For the season for us now.
Right.
She's the reason for us applying this precautionary principle because she is at high risk.
Yes.
Not that any of us want to transmit it to anyone.
Right. No, that's actually very important because we don't know who anyone else has at home
yeah.
or what anyone else's no. specific concerns or risks.
Yeah. So I don't want to be a vector for anyone,
right.
much less Eleanor.
Right.
But particularly Eleanor.
Right.
So...
So that was our 2 weeks.
That was our 2 weeks. And and then I immediately, after Labor Day, I had to start going back into the office. And this is a particularly, emotionally challenging time after all this to be going back into the office. Because... I mean, I'm not going to single out my workplace as being unusual in any way.
No.
But in mid-July, they lifted all their restrictions. They opened back up. It was a big lot of announcements and all this. They're not requiring masks anymore.
COVID-19.
Yeah. And it's a strange environment now.
Yeah.
Because about 2/3 of the people I see in the office are unmasked and about 1/3 are masked.
Yeah.
And some of the ones that are masked are like their nose is hanging out or it's hanging from one ear or it's on their chin or whatever. It's like not doing any good. I don't know why they
even
bother,
on?
Right? Yeah. Like either put it fully on or just take it off.
What's the point? Right. Okay.
But, and given that there's no requirement anymore, I don't feel like I can go up to people on like an individual basis and say, hey, would you mind putting your mask on?
I'm just saying.
I don't feel like I can do that.
Are they all team science people too?
I don't really know very many people.
Okay.
I don't really speak to or know very many people at the office.
Right.
Really only two.
Oh, that's right, right.
Well, that's not true. I have met and had brief conversations with two or three others.
Okay.
But there's only one person that I really work directly with.
Right.
Yeah, everyone's sitting in the cafeteria unmasked, you know. But
eating, but still.
Right.
But they're having people eat in the cafeteria.
Right. And the saving grace is that the office is still quite empty.
Oh, yeah, because nobody wants to come back, COVID or no.
It's not empty like it was.
Right, ghost
empty. But I'd say, I don't know, I don't have exact numbers, but I'd say the facility is built out for about 120 people to be in it. There are a lot of empty desks.
Yeah.
And some of that is just because they're planning to hire a bunch more, right?
Oh, right.
It's not like they have quite that many employees now, but they do have a number of employees. But on the days I was in last week, I'm guessing that there were 30 or 40 people in the building, and at least half of them were working on the garage side, dealing with the cars and all that versus the software and IT folks.
Right.
So it's not very crowded. So, but what I've been doing is I, you know, wear a mask around the building all day. Mm-hmm. I've mostly been working in a separate electronics lab room, which only has one or two other people in it at maximum and often none, mm-hmm. which makes me feel a little safer because it also has some extra ventilation for solder fumes and the cooling of a whole racks of computers, right? Oh. So there's a little extra ventilation there. I don't know if it's moving in the right direction as to like to the outside instead of like
or what?
Pulling. I think it's mostly pulling in outside air into the server racks. But
oh, that's good.
I guess it's cooled air, but I don't know exactly what's circulating and what's ventilating. You know.
Oh right.
I really don't know, but it feels comforting to have to feel air moving in the room. Mm-hmm. You know. When I eat, I get my food from the cafeteria, take a plate outside to, there are a couple of picnic tables.
Right.
And so I've been eating outside to take my mask off. And the one person that I'm working directly with, I sit diagonally across from him at the picnic table rather than face on. He kind of gives me quizzical looks, but I'm like, no, this is just where I want to sit. We eat out there, and
which is and this is what's fascinating to me, right? Is people just don't grasp any of this, like why you would do any of these things?
Yeah,
like they're like, huh, that's weird. I wonder what that's about. That's why would you have all the windows open while you're driving? Like, that's weird. What's that for? You know,
right?
How strange. Why are you sitting over there? Huh, weird. Right.
Yeah, I'm not ready to... At some point, I need to tell the story of how I lost my last job.
But you're not there.
I'm not there. But okay. The short form is that it was because of this constant dismissive refusal to take really any precautions seriously.
Right.
And to actually mock and belittle the people who did. Mm-hmm. You know, as crazy, right? Mm, yeah. It's a form of gaslighting, and it's really pernicious and antagonistic. It's a form of bullying as well, you know. Mm-hmm. So if the person is your boss, say, it's a form of bullying.
For example.
Yeah. But I think, okay, so anyway, that's been our couple of weeks. We took
so this is
way
really,
too long.
Yeah, yeah. So it was really stressful going into work at all after...
It's still stressful.
Right.
It's still nerve wracking.
Right. And in the wake of that, you've also been testing
every other day
with a home antigen test.
Yeah, and I've had no positives, but
so we'll see how that goes.
But I am trying to be as cautious as possible, and I've only gone in the office
like what, 3 times?
3 days past week, and but I'm going to need to probably go in most days for the next couple weeks.
Right.
Because I finally have to like put my hands on a real hardware board that we all have, that we have in the office with the equipment that we need to run these tests. Up until just this last week, we haven't had all this stuff in one place where I could put my hands on it.
Right.
So.
And now you do. So. We'll see how it goes.
But I've been really grateful, honestly, to be able to work remotely almost entirely.
Almost entirely, yeah.
So I don't feel like I can be making a big stink about anything. But I do believe that probably at some point soon, someone's going to be like, you know what, we need to, is going to say, you know what, we need to bring back the mask restrictions because it's probably going to take an outbreak in the building.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I think that's the only thing that would do it.
But it's an outbreak in the building is getting quite likely.
Yeah. Well, and I this is the thing that gets to me though, right? And just what I was saying a moment ago about how people just don't seem to comprehend anything.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to suggest they're stupid at all. It's
very frustrating how stupid smart people can be.
Not even that. There are so many things that I just don't know anything about. Like I have no idea. And even if you explained them to me, I really wouldn't necessarily grasp it. And I don't think that's because I'm remarkably stupid. I'm just sort of ordinarily stupid. And
I read these. You send me papers to read sometimes.
And
I read them, and I feel like I can get a lot of information from them, including and evaluate them as to whether they're good or bad papers.
Right.
But when they get into the weeds of like the statistics, because I'm
standard deviation.
Well, I understand that. I mean, that's not hard. But because I don't have a deep, you know, background in biostatistics. I only know the basics, mean and median and sample size and P and, you know, chi-squared and the standard deviation.
That's a good start. Yeah.
Okay. It's a start, but it's not, you know, I'm a programmer. I'm not a statistician.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, that gets you a good pathway. Right. Most
but I'm saying I can't necessarily evaluate all their claims. And if they start... whenever I'm into a scientific paper and they start throwing around partial differential equations showing flow rates or this rate or whatever, right. I'm like, I'll just have to take your word for it at this point.
So this really is to talk about people's ignorance as if it's a moral failing on their part.
Right.
Really, it's to talk about the leadership failing of our health professionals in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Because people aren't like amateur epidemiologists at home. They're just not. They're not in the workplace.
You are, but
that's me, and I'm a weirdo.
Yeah, but this was like not just a hobby interest, but actually an academic interest for some time.
So I think it's actually ludicrous to expect your manager or your manager's manager or any of the higher ups to actually be practicing epidemiology.
Yeah, well, I mean it's not.
Yeah, that's just
it's not a reasonable ask.
That's not a reasonable ask.
It's nice if they have some understanding.
Sure, that's great. I mean, and really, the only people that I feel are falling down on the job and I'm embarrassed by are certain universities and their schools of epidemiology that are doing batshit things. But that aside, like any sort of tech company, a manufacturing company. Office, whatever, excepting say maybe medical offices, the idea that they would understand and implement safety protocols based on epidemiology is absurd.
Yeah.
That's an absurd expectation and it's a big ask.
Right.
And that's why we have a Department of Public Health.
Right.
To make those decisions and to tell them what to do.
But having any trust in that department makes a lot of assumptions that are no longer true.
They're no longer actually true. Yep. So this
is like they're intellectually independent. They're not under any kind of regulatory capture.
They're politically independent. They're et cetera.
Yep.
All those things, and they aren't necessarily.
And they're not incredibly worried about their next funding cycle.
Worried about the next funding cycle, worrying about death threats, worrying about, whatever.
Yeah.
Right? So
and the Trump administration's response, I mean, lots of other administrations were really bad on this, but the Trump administration in particular, politicizing all this from the get-go, they guaranteed that, people's, to make public health workers, their lives miserable.
To do anything that they ought to be doing. Now, I have to say, I'm not willing to lay this all at 45 feet.
I'm not intending
Or to even to hold him out as particularly bad about this. I mean, he was bad, but it's been bad across the board.
This has all been a slow slide into
irrelevance
and
the deep failure.
And siloing.
The deep failure was when folks in positions of power within the public health silos could see this screaming down the highway miles away.
Right.
I mean, some of them did start screaming.
Right.
But like in late February, March.
Right.
They could have been screaming in January. They could have been screaming in December.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was reading stuff in December.
Right.
But
No, I was working with a team in China.
Oh, who's? Oh, that's right.
That had
right.
been like all laid off.
Laid off and locked down.
Locked down and sent and sent locked home. Out of their workplace, and they were. The project I was working on depended on their work, but suddenly they
right.
were unavailable for comment because they literally couldn't leave their homes.
Right.
So I was,
yeah, they had a real
I was quite aware.
Yes.
Of what was happening in China.
So it's really absurd to think that, I mean, if you understood the scale of what was going down, and really they did.
Yeah.
They did. I mean, maybe you didn't, maybe the media didn't, maybe any number of facets of American society didn't understand in late December and January. But people who work in public health
right.
on an administrative level,
right.
they knew what they were looking at. You know, this was the big one,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And
it was like one number shy of apocalypse. You know, it wasn't Captain Trips in that it wasn't like an immediately fatal, like
right.
But it wasn't even a smallpox level 30% fatal or whatnot. But it was a big one in that it spread rapidly.
It was very deadly, more deadly than anything we're used to in our lives.
Yes, absolutely.
And so if you see that coming and you don't start, I don't know.
Jump up and down and squeak,
tell everyone you know.
Yes.
I mean, call every favor you have. I don't know what to think of you.
No.
And that's...
It ain't good.
It's not good. I have nothing nice to say about that. And I would not have expected 45, the individual, to care, notice, or pay attention.
No, not at all.
And and probably not his administration to much extent. But the public health professionals who aren't necessarily part of his administration,
right.
Where the hell were they?
Where was anyone?
Where
really?
Were they? What were they doing? They were
no.
Yeah, it was.
They were silenced.
Silenced.
Yeah, they were warned off. They were waved off the runway.
Or even I don't know, self-centered to some extent, I guess.
Yeah.
But all that said, that's why, frankly, the folks who are behind in the driver's seat right now aren't doing any better. They have signaled that COVID is over. They've signaled that masks aren't required. They've
right.
signaled that...
Even if, I mean, in their actual written statements and whatnot, it's not exactly what they say, but by their actions, they're signaling all
that's what they're
things.
Signaling. That's what they're saying. And so why would any employer conclude on their own volition
otherwise right.
that that's just not true? And in fact, the only people I've seen at any point during the pandemic take bold action either are... or live with someone at grave risk.
Right.
They're taking it very seriously and paying attention to every piece of information and acting accordingly in their organization, whether it's a church or a business or whatever it is. Like specifically, I've noticed that a restaurant we like to frequent for carry out.
Yes.
They close the dining area independent of when the health department tells us to, right?
Yes.
Like, so as soon as, I've noticed the pattern is as soon as the line starts to go up, they just close the dining area.
They're looking at the numbers themselves.
They're looking at the numbers themselves.
They're not waiting for Washington.
They're not waiting for anybody
to tell them
anything.
Yeah.
The numbers go up, right. The dining room closes.
Right.
The numbers plateau down to close to pre-pandemic levels, they open the dining room again.
Right.
And then as soon as it goes up, they close it.
And it's the tragedy of this whole thing that cycle keeps repeating. Cause
yeah, it keeps repeating. But in that same vein, they've pivoted hard
to take out.
Not just takeout, but
curbside.
But to support curbside takeout and to support people, and to come and still buy their food.
Right. And they're doing such a good job at that they haven't closed.
They haven't closed. Know. They've stayed open. And so, you know, it's their livelihood. They have to stay open. But someone there is going to die if they continue with business as usual. Someone there that matters to them.
Yeah.
And so they've made this decision.
I think it's just because it's like the Asian groceries and the Chinese restaurants. As foreign nationals, they're much more aware of how dangerous
right.
this kind of thing actually is.
Actually is and can be.
Especially the Asians. I mean, they've had these flu pandemics.
Since the early 2000s.
And they've become used to masking.
They just do it as a norm.
Yeah.
Right. So. It's a personal norm.
I mean, so our favorite Chinese place has a really on point takeout game, very as safe as possible.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, that's what's going on at home. We've got a few articles to look at.
We do.
I know. So we've done a whole podcast just bringing you up to date, but we also have articles too.